Continuing now to talk about the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel that Jesus is warning in Matthew 24:15 to the Jews to pay attention to this particular sign, because the strict instructions concerning this one are to get out of Jerusalem as fast as you can, get out of Judea. And going back to try to understand, as Jesus said, now let the reader understand, trying to understand everything about this abomination of desolation, who it is and what it is that he's doing. At this point in the tribulation period, which is a seven-year period, the midpoint, 3.5 years, Satan will be thrown out of the heavenlies by Michael and his accompanying angels. He will no longer have a place in the second heavens, which he has been occupying during this age. You know, in Job we see Satan having a place in the second heaven, going up and reporting in to God along with other angels. And he has a permission to roam the earth, and he also has permission to be in the heavenlies. And he is among those who are called the prince of the, he's the prince of the power of the air, and he has rulers and authorities and spiritual authorities in heavenly places, heavenly meaning the second heaven. But at this point he's thrown out, and he's thrown down to the earth, and he's so angry, he knows he has only a short time, and he is ready to persecute the Jews, whom he has always hated, and the children of the Jews and the Jewish Messiah, the believers in Christ. So that's at verse 17 of chapter 12. And then going on, John speaks of how the Antichrist becomes this beast. It says, "And the dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, and on his heads were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority." The dragon, being Satan, is giving this beast, the Antichrist, who is a conglomerate of all the beasts that we saw in the book of Daniel. He is out of these nations, and he is leader of these nations, once again, back into power. And Satan is the one empowering him. He says, "And I saw," at verse 3, "one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed." Somehow, the man called, known as the Antichrist, whatever his name will be, has a blow to the head, which apparently would normally be something that would take his life. But somehow, either he doesn't completely die, or he does die, and he's brought back to life by the power of Satan. And at that point in time, Satan enters into him. Just as Satan entered into Judas on the night that he betrayed Christ and reported in to the Pharisees and Sadducees who were looking for him, gaining his 30 pieces of silver. Satan, it says there at the Last Supper with Jesus and the disciples, Satan entered into him, and he went and did what he had to do. This says, "His fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. They worshipped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to wage war with him?'" In other words, you can't even kill him because he's going to come back to life. And so he's amazing. He's got supernatural power. And yes, he does. He has the supernatural power of Satan in him. And he has just done an act that is a counterfeit of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's Satan's major theme, is to counterfeit the works of Christ. So it says, "There was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies. and authority to act for 42 months. He's got 3.5 years to act, and he becomes just power hungry and greedy for the worship that belongs to God. And so that's where he becomes the beast. That's how he becomes the beast. Antichrist is certainly a godless man when he becomes the leader of the world at that time, at the beginning of the 7-year period. But he is not a beast. He is not filled with the anger and hatred and desire of Satan to persecute the Jews and the Christians, or the believers they would be called at that time, until Satan comes into him and takes over and is ruling through him. This is the one who sets up the abomination of desolation, or the abomination that causes desolation. An abomination of desolation was a pig in 164 AD, slain, blood placed on the altar, commanded to be worship Zeus or die. That was an abomination. It desecrated the temple, it desecrated the altar of God, and it brought devastation, it brought desolation. It brought such a killing of the Jews, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of Jews. And at this point in the future, it will cause the desolation of 2/3 of the Jewish people, which is a tremendous number to be slain. So it's an abomination when this man, this lawless man, enters the Jewish temple and sets up an image of himself and commands that it be worshipped. And so it brings desolation, because those who will not worship will die, and the whole nation of the Jews will be more than decimated. 2/3 will be killed. So that's what Daniel meant by the abomination that causes desolation, or the abomination of desolation. And Jesus says that's going to be an obvious thing that's going to happen at the midpoint of this 7-year period. And when you see that happen, I'm warning you, to you Jewish people, you get up and get out as quickly as you can. Don't even go back for a coat. Don't go back for anything, because it's going to come down so fast that you won't be able to get out. Get out of there and don't turn back.
So Daniel is speaking to Jews who are very familiar with the book of Daniel and this term abomination of desolation. In verse 15, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place," parenthesis, let the reader understand, and that parenthesis was just what Carol has been talking about, "then do this. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things out that are in his house. And let him who is in the field not turn back to get his cloak." So it's like when you hear of the abomination of desolation, you just get out of Dodge. I mean, that's all there is to it. On the move, don't wait, don't get your clothes, whatever, just get out. Find shelter, find safety, find protection some way. But woe to those who are with child, and those who nurse babes in those days. So you can just imagine this evil, evil, evil Satan embodied person, pregnant women, women nursing babes. You can just imagine the horrible things. It's hard for them to travel, and they're going to be an easy prey. "But pray that your flight may not be in the winter." Well, if you're trying to travel, it's in the winter, and you're trying to travel with your whole family, well, it's just more of a problem. "Or pray that your flight may not be on the Sabbath." remember, at this time, temple worship is going to be restored. That many of the laws, the Jewish laws, and of course the Sabbath will be, you know, that everything's going to be shut down on the Sabbath. There's probably not going to be public transportation. And there may be rules about what you can do on the Sabbath, like you can't travel on the Sabbath. That would be work. 4, pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath, for there will be a great tribulation such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. And unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days shall be cut short. Now, this is kind of interesting because we know how long the tribulation period is. You know, we know that it's 7 years. That's a certain number of days. And we know that the last half is 3.5 years. And that's spoken of in various different places. And even the days are numbered. It says there will be 1,260 days in this last half of the tribulation period. So it's saying it's going to be cut short. But it says, actually, it doesn't say the number of days will be cut short. It says the days shall be cut short. And this is really interesting to me, and it was really interesting when I read Revelation 8:12, because it says one-third, it's talking about this very time, and it says one-third part of the day and one-third part of the night shall be smitten. So a third part of the day would be 4 hours, a third part of the night's 4 hours, so we subtract 8 hours, that leaves a 16-hour day. That's in Revelation. And in Amos 8:9, it also talks about this very time in the tribulation, and it talks about the sun going down at noon. So that may even be a 12-hour day. But it says, unless the days have been cut short, then no life would have been saved, but for the sake of the elect. Now, if you're talking to Jews about Jews, the elect are probably those Jews who will be saved, that third who will be saved. For the sake of those, they will be saved. Then, if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Christ, or there he is, don't believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise, will show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect, those same Jews who will be saved, if possible. It's like, it's really not possible. So this is the third time that Jesus has warned about. You know, he started off this whole discourse saying to him, see to it that no one misleads you. Here he's saying it again. And just imagine, it's going to be horrible, horrible, horrible. And, you know, they are waiting for some deliverer. They're waiting for the Messiah, some Messiah to deliver them. And so there's going to be all these rumors. So he said, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I've told you in advance. If therefore they say to you, behold, he's in the wilderness, do not go forth. Or behold, he's in the inner rooms, do not believe them. So what's it going to be like when he comes? Well, here he's going to say what it's going to be like. For just as the lightning comes from the east and it flashes even to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. So it's like you're not going to have to worry. When he returns, it's not going to be a hidden thing. It's not going to be over here or over there or in the rooms or he's down there, down by the river. Everyone is going to know when he returns.
Okay. It goes on at verse 28 to say, wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Now that is a little bit obscure saying.
Why don't you just read the rest of that?
Read the rest of the passage? Uh-huh. Well, let's just put it all together, 28 through 31. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Well, at verse 27, you have this coming of the Son of Man. And then Jesus says, wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. I think we can see something about that best by just turning over to Revelation chapter 19. This is right at the end when Christ comes back to the earth to set up his throne. And everyone will be able to see him. Let's look at verse 11 and begin there. And I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on it is called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he judges and wages war. His eyes are a flame of fire, and on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written on him, which no one knows except himself. And he is clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. I believe that blood there is not the blood of the cross, but the blood of the battle that he is there to wage against the Antichrist and his legions of soldiers. And his name is called the Word of God. And the armies which are in heaven, clothed in fine linen, white and clean, were following him on white horses. From his mouth comes a sharp sword, so that with it he may strike the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron, and he treads the winepress of the fierce wrath of God the Almighty. And on his robe and on his thigh he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried out with a loud voice, saying to all the birds which fly in mid-heaven, come, assemble for the great supper of God, so that you may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of commanders, and the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and of those who sit on them, and the flesh of all men, both free and slaves, and small and great. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies assembled to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet who performed the signs in his presence by which he had deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire which burns with brimstone. And the rest were killed with the sword which came from the mouth of him who sat on the horse. And all the birds were filled with their flesh. I think that's just a saying that Jesus puts in there to say there's going to be a huge scene here. He's just said it's going to be obvious, like the lightning flashing from the east to the west. So you don't need to worry about trying to figure it out where I'm going to be. And also, there's going to be such an enormous carnage, such an enormous battle. It's going to be obvious that this has got to be the end. We're not going to wonder how much longer there is here. And he says there there will have to be a cleanup. And when you see all of these things coming about, I'm back. There's no question about it. It's going to be such an obvious thing. There's going to be an enormous battle, blood running as high as the horses' bridles once again. And there's going to have to be birds of the air to clean it up. It's going to be so bad. And so you'll know that it's finished when you see all of this. And then he says, and after the tribulation of those days, you're going to have sun, moon, doing very strange things. The sun's going to be darkened. The moon won't give its light. The stars will fall out of the sky. There are going to be such drastic signs in the physical bodies in the heavenlies that it's going to be the end, and everybody's going to know it's the end. And the powers of the heavens will be shaken. I believe that those are the powers of the prince of the power of the air, who is being defeated here. And at his defeat on the earth, all of his demons, rulers, principalities, powers, authorities in the heavenlies, their power will be stripped from them, and they will be shaken out of their place of authority, which they now have. And so there's going to be a physical shaking in this earth and the universe around us, and a spiritual shaking. As Satan is defeated here, all of his powers will come down. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. It's like a victory sign. I don't know if it's going to be the cross, if it's going to be the Shekinah glory. I don't know. Nobody knows really what the sign of the Son of Man is. Maybe it's the lightning that flashes from east to west. So obvious that that is written here. But I think there won't be any question about it when it's seen. It's going to be known to be, that's Jesus. That's his sign. He's coming back. And it says, all the tribes of the earth will mourn. I think certainly all the Jewish tribes will mourn. All the 12 tribes. It tells us that in Zechariah 14, that each one with their household will mourn over him as over an only son. When they see him and they recognize him, he's the one with the scars in his hands and in his forehead and the wound in his side. He's the one we killed. We could have had him back then. We could have had all this kingdom. We missed it. We really missed it. And they're going to mourn over him as one mourns over the loss of an only son, it says. All the tribes of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds in the sky with power and great glory. And then it says that he's going to send his angels out. We see this in Isaiah, I think it's chapter 11, where it says that he will bring them back a second time. This is the first time. He's gathering the Jews into their land right now in this 20th century that we've just finished. Throughout the 20th century, the Lord has been gathering his people back into the land so that there were sufficient of them enough to be the land of Israel in the land. Not in belief, in Zionism, in national zeal, not in believing spiritually, but he's calling them back for his dealing with them in the fiery furnace, in this Jacob's time of Jacob's trouble, so that he can bring out that remnant that he's going to put the heart of believers into. It says that he will now, after they've believed on him, they've seen him, they've wept over him, they've mourned over him, they've said he's the one, and they've come to him and been saved in a day, Isaiah 66 says. Can a nation be saved in a day? Yes. the Jews will be saved in a day when they see him. And it says now he's going to send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect, meaning the Jews from all over the earth who are not back in the land, any others of them that are out there in whatever place. It says from the four winds, every direction. The angels are going to literally be carrying Jews back into the land so that there won't be any Jews scattered anymore. All the Jews will be living in the land during the millennium, and they will have the entire land grant that God promised to Abraham. Not this little slice they've got now, this pitiful little piece of land that everybody's crazy to have and capture. No, they will have all the way from the Mediterranean to the Euphrates and much north and south of where they are. That's what God promised to Abraham. And the angels will bring all of his elect back into the land to dwell there. From one end of the sky to the other. What a glorious thing that will be to witness. Now it says, all right, you want to, is that the end of this section? Mm-hmm.